Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. Today is the 23rd of March of 2021, and we are on episode number 370, talking about what the heck today. On Teams with me, we have myself, Cynthia, Suji, Evan, Kale, and our special guests, Peter Lodati and Gino Felicetti. And before getting to our special guests, of course, we have a round of updates. Evan and Kale, I know you both put some of those in. Evan, do you want to start?
Sure, yeah. So one of these was, you know, Windows Virtual Desktop. You know something has come of age when there's a certification for it, right? So there'll be a new certification coming out for Windows Virtual Desktop Specialty. It's coming at the end of the month. You know, obviously, if you play in that space, definitely a good way to demonstrate to other folks what you know. Also put in my normal plug. For me, it's not about passing the test. It's with the studying you do to take the test that is sort of the high value part as well. And then the other piece, and I really like this one, the Azure AD team has shipped a script which will test device registration health. So if you have a device you're getting ready to do Azure AD join, it'll go test, do you have connectivity to all the right places? You know, what's the configuration? What's the setting? And I think that's a great tool, right? Again, when you're troubleshooting something that you just got to remember all these things, it's a great way to encapsulate this all in a script. And we'll include the link to that in the show notes.
For sure. And in terms of the certifications, I just took one of the renewal tests recently, and that's pretty cool for, I think, a number of certs. If you're within 6 months of your cert expiring, you get an option to take, I got like a 25-question test.
Oh, so like a short one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. Okay.
And then it gets renewed for a year, and it's for free. So that was pretty cool. So if people have their certs expiring soon, definitely log on to MS Learn and check like if there's an option to renew it, and or you'll have gotten an email already. And what about you, Kale?
Yeah, I got two this week. One of them is in Evan's backyard with SQL. But it's actually around Azure Migrate. There's been some enhancements there to do things, agentless discovery of like SQL Server infrastructure. I think this extends even into like the VMware environment to be able to do things like, you know, basically get control of inventory, basically what you have there from your SQL Server footprint, and then basically be able to do things like right sizing, cost projections, all the different things that you would need to do migration into an Azure-based SQL solution, and they kind of talk through all the different pieces that go along with that. It's really neat. And again, it's agentless, so there's no chance of messing up something on your database as a result of running this migration. The second one is, you know, it was something from Mark Rusinovich. We get these a lot, and he just presented at Ignite around, it's called the Inside Azure Data Center Architecture session. These are always really good. So for those who haven't and kind of want to geek out on what's going on under the covers inside Azure and all the kind of different like knobs and dials and things that are happening inside of there, Mark does a great job of, you know, walking into the details there and talking about, you know, even futures and things like that around that. So there's a really good, his videos up there from Ignite and then some links, you know, to some of the stuff around the reliability and the architecture tracks.
Thank you. So do you have anything to share?
Well, I just wanted to add on that one with Mark Rusinovich. I think that's the one where this morning I caught this very nice feature called the Azure Chaos Studio, which is a feature that they're just, you know, they're still in private preview, but it would allow customers to do chaos engineering in Azure, inject faults and things like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And, you know, Evan, I know Kale and both of you guys have pointed me out to how I could sign up for that. But I think we need to get somebody to talk about that sometime in the future. I love that chaos Studio
Absolutely.
Feature, which is coming into Azure.
Yeah, and just to comment on that quickly, and we can go on, but that's been around for a while, by the way. I remember years ago, I actually presented it at one of our internal tech credits on that. Like,
are you
years
serious?
Ago.
How did I miss this?
Yeah, it was these really cool agents you could put out there. I don't know what it's evolved to.
But it was sort of an internal-only thing back then, right? This is as we were morphing this into an external capability.
Yeah.
It's a service, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a widget in the portal soon, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, great to know that. Yeah. Cynthia, I think we could, back to you, we can turn it over to our guests.
Yeah. Peter and Gino, would you introduce yourselves to our listeners again? Tell us what you do at Microsoft and what you're passionate about.
Sure, I'll go first. My name is Peter Ladotti, and I'm a cloud architect at Microsoft. Been here since the last century. Sounds like such a long time now. So I've had experience with a wide breadth of different technologies in the Microsoft universe. But for the past 10 years or so, I've been pretty much focused on Azure full time as my main gig. So I like helping our customers come up to speed, learn the platform, help them as they do a migration to or adopt the cloud in their organization. So that's typically what I do.
Hey guys, I'm Gino Filicetti. In the same role as Peter, cloud solution architect. My background is very different, though. I've been with Microsoft for, I was about to say only 5 years, but I think now it's not an only thing anymore. So I've been around since then. My background is from the open source world, specifically Java development, Linux, that sort of thing. And these days, I focus very much on cloud native Kubernetes technologies.
And Gino, correct me if I'm wrong, but has your beard grown longer since the last time we had you on the show?
This is my COVID beard. I'm one year in, and it'll be gone. Once I get jabbed.
Sorry, couldn't help myself.
So you know if Gino's safe when he gets his beard cut off.
Yeah, right. That's the visual indicator there. Yeah.
He took Movember one step too far.
So what have you guys been up to? Last time we had you on the show, both of you, was a couple of years ago, I think, 2 years ago, Cynthia, at least. And we talked about What the Hack, and I guess that continues. So what's been happening in that space?
Yeah, so we've been continuing ever since then. I think it was almost exactly 2 years ago, around this time, I remember it. Being around this time. But we've grown significantly since then. I mean, most listeners probably, you know, wouldn't have heard of us. So let's just step back real quick and give you the big thing. You know, what is What the Hack? So What the Hack is a open source repository open to the world, not Microsoft only thing, containing a series of challenge-based learning workshops. So things that, you know, inside of Microsoft, we typically call hacks or hackathons, but it's very specific in that these are group-based learning experiences. So this typically would be forming teams of students. Each of these teams, typically, let's say 5 students, would have a coach, and the students themselves are not provided any answers or hands-on steps on how to get through everything. They got to figure stuff out from scratch, right? And the coaches are there to provide loose guidance and kind of help them stay within the guardrails. But other than that, the students are on their own.
It's really, they got to figure out their own thing. And so the coach can act as a technical advisor, you know, give them some advice or tips, and then also make sure they're not, you know, going down a rabbit hole. But really, they have to figure it out. You know, they're given a set of goals, and it's go to the documentation, go to the internet search, and go look things up and figure it out. And that's very different than, I think, the traditional way folks have done hands-on, you know, learning, where you might have done, like, what they say, a hands-on lab, where you get a 20-page Word document, and it might have 100 steps saying, you know, do this step, do that step, click here, copy and paste this code snippet. And you could blindly do all those things, and you'll accomplish what you set out to do, like maybe set up, I don't know, a Kubernetes cluster in Azure. But at the end, are you going to really remember any of that? Probably goes in one ear and out the other. Whereas if you're forced to stumble your way through it, you retain the knowledge in your head. And we've gotten that feedback from the students that, you know, that's one reason they really like this format of workshop, is because they're like, yeah, I learned a lot, and like, I'm going to remember this now.
Yeah, so since we met Sujeet actually last time, we probably had something like 6 or 8 hacks in a repository. Now we're approaching 35. I think our 35th one is coming in soon.
Wow.
So yeah, we've been busy.
Sevenfold?
That is impressive.
We've been busy, quite busy. The nice thing is, so this is very much community driven, right? It started with us, cloud solution architects, and our teams. We're in 2 different organizations, but it's expanded quite a bit beyond there. You know, we have folks from the Fast Track team contributing, from the MTC's technology centers also contributing. The word's gotten out, and it's a great vehicle for people to like contribute IP into something that has visibility and can be used at customers even without people knowing. Like sometimes I have authors that are, you know, they'll come to me and say, "Hey, I just heard such and such account team just use my hack, and they did it all on their own." So we tell them usually like, "Hey, you did your job," you know, because the way these things are packaged up, we give the coaches and whoever the lead event organizer is, we tell the authors to give them as much guidance as possible. How to set up the event, any specific weirdness that needs to happen or be set up in the student subscriptions.
I think.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say one of the biggest things that's changed besides the size, the number of contributions and hacks that are out there, is when we probably last spoke to you, you know, it was like 6 or 7 workshops that were submitted by folks just contributed whatever content they wanted to. And, you know, we had defined the format, but what we've done since then is we put together some really detailed guidance on both how to author a hack. So you provide the right guidance to someone who wants to deliver it, who might not be yourself later on. And also we put together a very detailed hosting guide on how to host these events, especially now hosting them virtually in Microsoft Teams, given the state of the world. So those 2 things, once we put that set of documentation in place, especially for the author's guide, really helped encourage folks to contribute because they said, "Oh, this is real easy. I've been doing workshops with my customers or with whoever for a while. Now let me just put this together and, you know, give others the benefit of sharing and using that content." So that also helped. That was a big thing that we did to kind of like programatize things. One
thing to touch on here is even pre-COVID, Teams has been the venue for delivery of these things, right? We've done a few in person, but mainly this has been a virtual thing since before COVID even. So we kind of pioneered the way that we use Teams in terms of breakout channels and, you know, lectures being given in a general channel, these sorts of things, right? I mean, there's a whole prescriptive document that we have on how to host the event, like Peter was saying. So, and then as you guys know now, this is kind of commonplace. We mandate everyone keep their cameras on, their mics on. We want to mimic the feeling of being at a table and being accountable to the other people on your team.
Couple questions on this. Like, this is super cool, and I remember a couple years ago back when this started. So are you saying basically, as our listeners, if they have stuff they want to contribute, it's as simple as, you know, obviously you guys have guides there to help people, you know, be effective with what they're putting up there, but I can issue a PR and you guys, you know, if it meets criteria, will just be accepted and be part of that repo?
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely.
So that's how it's gone. We have a very, very detailed how to author guide. We'll mm-hmm. give you guys all these quick links later. You can post them in the show notes. But right now we sort of have a brand. Everything's formatted identically. So last time we were here, they were very different. Things were in Word docs, some were Markdown. Now it's a very specific format in Markdown, the way it's done. You know, there's a separation between the student guide, so they don't see the answers that the coaches have, that kind of thing. But yeah, PRs will come. We've had, trying to think, Peter, I know like complete strangers off the street, I think we had a couple and they were like small modifications, not an entire hack. But we've had people like within Microsoft, and this is when I was telling you the Fast Track team got involved, just out of the blue, this PR showed up. And then it wasn't until days later, we kind of got an email about it. So it was kind of cool just to see a fully formed thing in our format just show up as a PR.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The secondary question I had along with that was like, as students or people who are consuming these things start using them, obviously there's sometimes feedback like, "Hey, that didn't work, or, you know, something changed. So they issue a PR to say, like, the Kubernetes version changed, so you got to do this thing now or whatever. I'm sure those things come up. But how are you – is there a strategy you guys have been employing to, like, kind of capture? Because a lot of times stuff that people experience, yeah, sure, if it's like a break fix thing of like, oh, yeah, don't run that command, run this command, that's one thing. But maybe just the experience of like, hey, when I was doing this, everybody just commonly fell into this hole, you know, over here. And capturing that and being able to be searchable. So when I'm doing this thing, I can be like, what the heck? This thing doesn't work over here. And then right away I can see in the comments, oh, yeah, this thing, have, you know.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we've always had is this notion of a coach guide. So the authors are encouraged to write a coach guide, which is not to be, you know, okay, here's the teacher's guide, the step-by-step, this is how you really should do it, right? I mean, they can do that if they want. We don't encourage them to, because then that gets out of date. But we want the coaches to provide the guidance to, you know, so that they can run the event of capturing that stuff. Like, what's the common rabbit hole? Where do people get stuck? What are the gotchas? You know, they, you know, they're setting up the cluster and they mess up this step all the time. And this is where you might want to inject and help a student, you know, maybe not give them the answer, but push, give them a little push in the right direction. And so a lot of times when the folks we're working with are authoring a hack, you know, we say just focus on the student guide and actual, you know, the hack challenges. And sometimes you write your coach's guide as a postmortem from the first time you run the event as a beta, because you're really using that as the location you're going to capture all that feedback that you really don't know where people are going to get hung up on until you've actually run the workshop. And so they'll put out like a maybe a bare bones coach guide at first when the hack's published, but after there's been a few deliveries, the coaches themselves will go back in and they'll update the coach guide. That's one thing I actually wanted to call out. There are two websites for What the Hack, right? So we've got our, I'll call it our student-facing website, but it's really our actual website. And that is only got links to the student information, like the guides that go through the challenges and stuff like that. The coach's guide, we keep that, it's not private, we obfuscate it. It's in our repo on GitHub. And the theory is, think about it, as a student, you don't want to give them all the answers. You know, someone's smart, they're going to be able to figure out and do a search on What the Hack and go find the repo and find the coach's guide. But if they do, we tell them, hey, don't cheat yourself out of an educational experience. And we try to make them go through it. But the way we do that just by default is keeping it separate. Everyone goes to the student website, and then the coaches have the, you know, not so private, but not so public link to the coach's guide where they can actually, you know, be running things behind the scenes.
And that leads to a follow-up. What is, you know, clearly I took a peek at one of these while we were, you know, while we were talking. I mean, I love sort of the way you've laid out these are the steps, right, without the instructions. What do you generally recommend in terms of sort of knowledge level going into it, right? Like, hey, you're able to walk in off the street not knowing anything, or do you recommend, hey, have a functional understanding of, you know, ARM or what Azure is? Like, where, you know, both from a coach and a student perspective.
Yeah, there's a lot of, most of them I would say don't need any knowledge. You can come off the street and do it, other than generic Azure knowledge.
Yep.
But the ones that do, like we have a GitOps one that's coming out in the next few weeks, that will say you need some, you know, deep experience with Kubernetes to get through this.
So you put sort of a disclaimer on the ones that you need some level of knowledge. Yeah. Okay.
And that'll be great. In the coach's guide and also on the front page. We will do that.
Great.
Everyone is cheering me on so that I get to ask my question. but do people, since you mentioned that they are given loose guidance, do people end up like getting to the solution in different ways? Or are these hacks meant to have like one path, or there's multiple paths that all lead to Rome?
It's definitely multiple paths. Right. So the coaches, most coaches guide will also say like, this is the end state. But sometimes I know in the one that Peter and I wrote on the intro to Kubernetes, there's a couple of challenges in there. We said they can go these two completely different ways to get to the answer. And sometimes that's not specified. But this is why we don't like Peter was saying, we don't like the coaches guides to be essentially hands-on labs with a bunch of screenshots and say, this is how the students are going to get through it. Because we want the coaches to remain flexible, right?
I think you'll find it varies also between the hacks. Some hacks are much more specific, like where there is, I don't say one true path, but a common path that most people will take. Others are much more, you know, broad, like you can really choose your own adventure in terms of how you complete the challenges. And it just depends on the technology, what it is it's covering. You know, we've got some hacks that are focused, you know, deep on one technology. They're probably going to be more like a very narrow path of solutions, where other hacks might be solution oriented, where you've got stitching multiple technologies together, and therefore you've got different choices of how you get things done.
Yeah, I think I have done a few of these. I think I've done the Kubernetes AKS one, the machine learning one, and the Azure DevOps one. And the AKS one I've actually coached as well. And I can tell you the experience on both sides is really phenomenal. You know, I'm really glad you guys open sourced all of these open hacks, and we were doing them internally. Especially I learned almost everything about AKS through the open hack actually that I know. And that learning experience from you know, digging into each of the challenges was what really taught me everything I know. Same thing with machine learning. I really hardly ever get a chance to do it as part of my regular engagements, but because of the open hack, I feel like I'm much better educated with it. And from the coaching side, you know, I mean, is there like, how do you, I know we had to pass some sort of, you know, I guess level of expertise before we could call ourselves coaches. Do you kind of suggest that, you know, the people that take on the coaching role first do the open hacks themselves, you know, the regular student-based open hack, and then take on a coaching role? Or, you know, if they're smart enough, they can just take it on. What's your guidance there?
That's a good question. So let me make a clarification. You referenced OpenHack there. So there's another program within Microsoft known as OpenHack, which is a formal internal training program we have at Microsoft, where all the employees have to go through that for learning.
It's a product.
And What the Hack, again, is a very it's almost the same. It's the same format, right? It's going through challenges and in small groups of people. With the coaching, it's the same format, just this is a community driven one within the company and also external. The lucky thing is that for all the Microsoft employees who have to go through that internal coaching training requirement for the OpenHack program, they're perfectly suited to pick up the What the Hack content and be a coach because they've already got those skills. But even if you don't, one of the things that we do differently from that the other program is that we do require the authors to build a coaching guide, or we strongly encourage them. I won't say require, because some of them have skimped on that a little bit. But the theory is, if you have a coach guide, anyone who has a little bit of knowledge in a subject matter should be able to read that and stay two steps ahead of the students and be an effective coach using their skills as a mentor to walk them through the learning activity. So it's very easy. And that's the other thing about the whole the program and the repo, is that anyone is empowered to host one of these events within their organization. So you want to use this within your company with your coworkers. You want to use this at a community group like a meetup or user group. You know, one person just can take the lead and say, I'll be a coach and read the coach's guide, and then have everyone else go through as a student. So, you know, you don't need like 50 people to run an event, right? You can get a group of like four or five of your closest teammates and, you know, block off a couple hours on a Friday and say, hey, let's go dive into this new topic and learn about it and just go through it together as a team. That's what makes it really fun.
Is there like a sweet spot of number of participants, or is it just a matter of like growing the coach to participant ratio and you can just expand like exponentially?
Yeah, it's the latter. As long as you have enough coaches to cover, we recommend 5-to-1, but sometimes you can push it 10-to-1 depending on how experienced the coaches are. But yeah, I would say on my side, I've done 25, I think, was the biggest one at a customer. What about you, Peter?
I think we had a bigger one, yeah, 25 or 30 for the larger ones. But often if I'm doing this with a single customer, it might just be a small group of 5 to 10. And five people is fine. I mean, you don't need – you could do it with three people. Long as they're there to learn the technology, it's worth going through it. The ratio is the key thing. You know, as long as you can maintain a 1-to-5 ratio of coach to attendees, you could grow it as big as you want. Not in the WhatHack, but that other program that Sujit mentioned, the open hack internally at Microsoft, we've pushed those as large as like 100 people going through a hack, you know, and then we also had like 20 coaches. But yeah, as long as you can scale the ratio, it works. But, you know, given that these are more community driven, they're typically going to be smaller in scale. But it really is the limit of a number of coaches you have.
And I think you answered this while you were talking about, you said something along the lines of, hey, take a Friday afternoon and go do this. For most of these, what would you recommend, you know, sort of blocking out to do this in your experience? Are these sort of chunked up such that you're trying to shoot for an hour or 2 hours? Like, obviously each one's a little bit different, but conceptually, how much time would we want to allocate if we were going to go do one of these hacks?
Yeah, so we have some pretty specific guidance when it comes to that. In the general case, so we see like two different types, right? There's the choose your own adventure type, where you can have any challenge, they're not related to each other. Mm-hmm. But typically we try to run them so that they build progressively on a business scenario. So you start with challenge zero, get your prerequisites installed, and then one through X all build upon each other. And the authors are, we've given the guidance that at any point, if a customer ends it and that's it, that's the most of the hack they're going to do, they got to walk away having felt some sort of sense of accomplishment that they've learned something, as opposed to, hey, it takes 7 challenges before you even see something running in your browser or wherever. That's less than ideal, right?
Oh, challenges so, being the sub-challenges in the broader each hack, right?
Each hack, let's say, intro to Kubernetes, you would start by building containers and the registry, and then you build the cluster on top of that and deploy and scale and blah, 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 blah. And they all build upon each other, right? So that's the general format. And we also asked that we have like 2 to 3 days worth of content for the students. And again, if a customer or the user group, wherever you're presenting, only has a day, then we're just not going to get through all the challenges, but we're going to progress through them and still learn something, right? We're not going to finish the entire topic, let's say. Like Peter was saying, now we're starting to chunk up half days and do more of them as opposed to having 2 full days back to back.
I think one of the things we've learned from, you know, being in the pandemic, even before the pandemic, we were doing these virtually is because we didn't have budget to go flying all around the world to deliver them. You know, we originally set the goal of, you know, this is a dedicated 2 or 3 day event, depending on what you've got available. So there's enough content for that. But virtually, you know, if you're going to put in a 6 or 7 hour workday, that's a lot of time behind a screen to stay focused. And so we have had, because it is flexible, it is virtual, I've had customers say, just, you know what, can we do 3 hour blocks spread out maybe over a week, or maybe 2 days a week over 2 weeks? And, you know, you can be as flexible as you want. It's up to you how you want to run it. Because an average challenge, and I don't want to say the average challenge time is X, because they vary. But, you know, if you have a good 2 or 3 hour block, you can get through, you know, probably, you know, 1 to 3 challenges, no problem on average. And that lets you chunk it up and have a natural break point between the days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there is some sort of a cost involved, right, in terms of hosting these in Azure. Do we give any guidance to them to say, hey, you know, this, you know, you're going to be spinning up this cluster for X number of times, going to cost that much money? Or is that just, you know, fire up the Azure calculator and figure it out yourself? How do we do it?
That's a good question. So first off, what the heck is totally self-serve? It is a bring your own subscription model, right? Like we don't have free credits to give out to anyone. In the coach's guide, and I say this is probably an area we could probably get a little better. We're trying to call out, you know, what will an attendee need to use in Azure to complete the hack, which could, like you said, go to the Azure calculator and figure it out. We haven't put price tags anywhere. We have been trying to say, like, hey, because we've had instances where if the students are sharing a subscription, they start hitting quota limits on certain things. And we'll say, hey, you know, this hack requires X number of CPUs and whatever, you know, increase your quota limit as a coach before you start the thing. You know, if you're using it on your own, that's really the way it is. You're going to use your own subscription. We've had most times when we do these one-on-one with a customer, we work with a stakeholder at the customer to make sure that they have an Azure subscription for the attendees available. But also we've had now some of the Microsoft event teams are running What the Hack events under the Microsoft umbrella. And they, for those where there may be one to many, multiple customers can attend, they are providing the Azure environment for the duration of the event. So those you can, you know, check on the calendar. But again, when you're doing these on your own, you know, internally within your organization, you're on your own. We're not giving out free Azure for that. So.
Yeah, just the last thing I was wondering was, you know, as this is growing, right, in size, you know, how many kind of hacks you have up there or different kind of tracks that you have up there. Interested to hear like how you guys are kind of managing that, not just from saying, hey, as things progress in Azure, as services change, as things get updated, obviously some things will break and people could issue PRs for, but is there any proactive, like, are you guys as a team, like, looking at these things and making sure, like, you have some sort of testing mechanism that's like, hey, by the way, this thing changed on this service, or this service doesn't exist the same way as it did before, and now all this stuff's broken, you know, like, so you're not, like, blindsided by people going, like, hey, I was trying to do one of those hacks, and everything's broken up here, like, what's going on, like.
Yeah, it is an issue, and it's kind of a big one, and I mean, you can maybe say we're a loose federation of hacks in this one repo, right? So it's kind of up to the authors. I mean, if the
and Azure never changes, right? Like, yeah. It's static.
Yeah, totally. That's why we've got screenshots everywhere. You know. Yeah. So we kind of have a handle on which authors are no longer with the company, let's say, or they've moved on. We do have a couple instances of ones that we want to just mark as deprecated, so people know that we're still going to keep them up there because there might be some value to someone, and they're also numbered, so we don't want holes in our numbers. but yeah, no, I mean that's one of the challenges, and I mean also for Peter and I, like, we have day jobs, but this seems to be our day job every once in a while. Like right now, there's 10 what the hacks in current development right now by various people within the company. So we try to stay on top of them with bi-weekly meetings just to get status updates, keep people on track. We have a proposal form as well when people are thinking about writing a new one, because we usually know that there's other people interested in things, or maybe two people submit a similar proposal. So we've had teams combine as well to develop, cross organization, which is works out for everyone.
So I'll add a couple of comments on that. So one good thing is, because they're challenge based and we encourage them not to have screenshots and step by step, when there are minor changes in the platform, it doesn't really break the hack all the time, right? I mean, granted, some technologies might fall completely out of, out of old, might get too old. But for most things, if the step by step changes, it doesn't matter because the goal is still the same. Stand up a cluster, right? Maybe the steps how to do that are different, but it is what it is. So we've been luckily to avoid that process of having to archive hacks, but we do try to look at that. But the other thing is, by leaving them up there, we actually had one of our, actually right now, one of our oldest hacks, we had someone come in and submit a pull request and update the hack to bring it forward. So I don't think we'll remove them, but we do retain editorial control over, let's say, the homepage of the whole site, and we'll just not prominently feature some of the older ones, if that makes sense. And like Gino said, just getting the authors together and collaborating them and knowing when to reach out to them. A lot of times, like most community projects, it happens on demand. So a hack can be getting old, but if a customer comes along and says, hey, I want a hack on X, and all right, here's the content. If it's out of date, you go update it. And that's how it gets updated sometimes.
That's awesome.
The joys of a community project.
Yeah, that's super cool. And because we didn't mention blockchain in the news, I don't see any blockchain hacks up there. So we'll definitely have to get on that and make sure we get at least one up there.
Yeah, you'll get a PR tonight from Kale.
That is a hole. Definitely can fill that.
You could submit the proposal. And then we'll set up bi-weekly meetings with you.
One note I want to just put here in the end. So Gino mentioned we have a proposal form that's actually internal in Microsoft. But for everyone listening here outside of the company, a pull request, just submit one. Even if your pull request is, hey, I have an idea, that's how we'll respond to you and get in touch and say, hey, let's work with you on it.
Yeah, we'll work on it. I think we should submit a blockchain one.
There we yes. go.
I might finally understand blockchain.
There you go.
If we do that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Cynthia, over to you to wrap it up.
Any other concluding thoughts from Gina or Peter? And we'll definitely include the links to the website and the repos and all the other good resources.
Thanks. We'll again. We'll put the links out there. And thanks for having us.
I checked on our date. It was February 21st, 2019. So just
wow.
So wait a minute. So that means by this time next year, we should expect 35 times 7.
200.
200 plus, you know.
Yeah. We'll look forward to that.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Great job, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.